Just east of Madison, an ancient Middle Mississippian culture put down roots and flourished for a number of centuries. At Ascalon State Park, there's still remnants of the village, namely the mounds, built for ceremonial and defensive purposes.
Ascalon is considered one of Wisconsin's premier historical and archaeological sites, and this week, UW-Madison undergraduates will be leading an excavation there, and on Friday, they'll host a special public event where visitors will be able to observe the dig and see artifacts on display.
Cecil Schrader joins us now to talk about the public archaeology days at Ascalon. She's a professor and chair of the anthropology department at UW-Madison. Cecil, welcome back to Central Time.
It's good to be back, Rob and Veronica.
Well, what do we know about the people who first settled in this region?
The people have been in Wisconsin for more than 12,000 years, but the archaeological cultural tradition that first lived at Ascalon that we're interested in is something that archaeologists refer to as late woodland. And these people lived at Ascalon for probably several generations before migrants from the south, most likely coming from Cahokia, which is outside of St. Louis, or somewhere near Cahokia and in Cahokia's hinterlands in Illinois. They moved north and joined the existing late woodland people at Ascalon and formed a coalescent community together.
Do we know anything about what the day-to-day life would have been like at that community?
Well, a lot of work has been done at the site over the past 100 years. Lots of excavations have been done, some of them in the residential areas of the site. We're really interested in that daily life, wanting to know what people did on a daily basis. What did their houses look like? How did they build them? Were the houses big and spacious or small, and things that they might have just taken shelter in a big storm like we're having today, or in the winter on cold nights? But many of the activities they did on a daily basis, like making the pottery that they needed to cook meals and to store food, or making stone tools like arrows that would be necessary for hunting, that kind of stuff probably happened outside of the houses. And those activities might leave debris. The flakes of stone that are created when you make a stone tool, for example, get gathered up and thrown away in particular areas. The bones of animals that were butchered and eaten, the bones will get thrown away. Some burned food might get thrown away. All of that stuff ends up in pits in the ground that often were excavated initially to store food, but then once the food had been removed from the pits, these holes in the ground would get filled with the trash that reflects the things that people ate and some of the activities that they did on a daily basis.
What kind of time span was there for this combined community of the local culture and the newcomers from the Cahokia area?
We think it spanned about a century, maybe a little bit more. So several generations, maybe five generations of families experienced this this time of different cultures coming together and sharing practices, developing new practices together, which we see in some really interesting ways expressed in the pottery, where local technology, the way people made their pots locally, persists through this coalescent period. But they start to make some of the vessels to look physically and stylistically like the pottery that the newcomers had brought with them.
What do we know about why the Ascalon community was abandoned?
That's an excellent question, one that I'm probably going to spend many years researching. But there may have been, you know, when you have groups of people who have very different traditions coming together, even though they may successfully negotiate those differences for many years, even generations, sometimes those differences kind of persist as long-term cleavage planes. And so there could be some possibilities that social differences created a rift in the community that resulted in everybody leaving. We know that the community is abandoned sometime around AD 1200, 1250, and we know that there were some climate changes that were going on across the mid-continent at that time that may have had an impact on the lives of people at Ascalon and just was not something they wanted to persist with. It's also likely when you have a population of, you know, hundreds of people living in one place for so many generations, they have an impact on the resources in the vicinity of the site. And so there may have been some environmental issues of their own creation that made it more challenging to live at Aztalan as well. So there's a lot of different things that probably came together that resulted in the abandonment of the community. It doesn't necessarily look, you know, we can't tell that it was abandoned instantaneously, like one day people were there and the next day they all left. It likely happened gradually, perhaps over one person's lifespan of 25 years or something like that.
Talking to Cecil Schrader from the UW-Madison Anthropology Department, looking at the archaeological site here in Wisconsin in Aztalan. And Cecil, an event coming up later this week where the public can go check out the work going on at Aztalan. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we're really excited to be able to do this. We've got a team of undergraduate students as well as two supervisors who have prior training in archaeology working on this project. And we're really excited to bring the public to the site and be able to share the knowledge that we're learning about the past lifeways at the site with the public, but also share what the students have been learning about how you do archaeology, the ethics of archaeology, and what they've been studying and as part of their course this semester that they're taking. We'll have some artifacts with us that have been excavated in prior projects, so they're cleaned up. The artifacts we've recovered this year are still very filthy. We'll be able to show people what the different pottery styles look like of the two different groups that lived at the site. We'll be able to show people the stains in the soil that represent house basins or post molds that were part of the walls of houses, and stains in the soil that represent trash pits, so that people can see how important the context that artifacts come from is in building an interpretation about daily life in the past.
So will the students be able to be observed while they're excavating, and the public can kind of watch from a distance?
Yes, so the public can stand and watch the students at work, talk with the students, and learn something about what their experiences have been like. If we're at a point where we're sifting the soil that we've removed from some of these features through a screen, the public can help with the screening of the soil and possibly find the kinds of materials that we're recovering. And we'll have students, the students will be taking turns to greet the public and give them a sort of brief introduction to our project and to the site.
You've worked with people doing archaeology for the first time. What is the biggest learning curve or the biggest thing that people doing this for the first time seem to have trouble with?
The different students, I think, may struggle with different things, but I think one of the biggest challenges is refining your observational skills to see subtle differences in the color of the soil or the texture of the soil, and to be able to distinguish what is an artifact, what is something that was touched by humans in the past and modified by them, versus what's a rock or a mineral concretion that might be in the soil.
Now, if someone is out maybe on their own property digging and they find something that they think could be interesting, can you give us any sort of rough pointers about how we should proceed, what we should do to handle this item?
Well, if you think it is something archaeological that represents the ancient native cultures of this area, being careful to mark the location so that you would be able to find where it came from again, or point that out to somebody at another time, and bringing it to an archaeologist at the university or at the State Historical Society or in your community outside the Madison area, and have them take a look at it to identify whether it's just a natural formation, rock, something like that, or an archaeological item. A lot of rocks can weather in interesting ways that makes them look like they're something, but they're just a natural rock.
As we start to wrap up, Cecil, what is the biggest unanswered question that you hope maybe this year's excavation or next year's will start to answer?
I think the biggest question that we're really interested in helping or try to get a handle on is how did people, how did the community organization shift through time? Did it start when the Mississippian people first came to the community? Did it just sort of explode as a big community, or did it grow gradually and then shrink in size? And we'd really like to get some kind of control over the way in which the community evolved over the century to century and a half that it was occupied by both people.
Well, I hope you have some good luck getting those answers. Sissel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Veronica. Thank you, Rob. Good to talk with you.
Sissel Schrader is a professor and chair of the Anthropology Department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She joined us today to talk about Public Archaeology Days at Aztalan State Park. For more information, you can head on over to the Central Time Facebook page.